This is Kurt Benrud with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to our program. We are reading from The Secret Garden, a novel by Frances Hodgson Burnett. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. We are pleased to present these dramatic readings of The Secret Garden using a cast of volunteer readers. Listen to TRRS for announcements about program times, or check our website at trianglereadingservice.org to review our complete schedule, or call us at 919-832-5138 with any comments or questions. That number again is 919-832-5138. In today's program, we continue reading from Chapter 14. This is program number 5 in our 9-week presentation. Mary is telling Martha about meeting Colin. Martha is surprised that Colin likes Mary. In fact, she is shocked that Colin did not simply send Mary away. Your reader for Chapter 14 is Heather Boggs.
"The world's coming to an end!" gasped Martha. "What is the matter with him?" asked Mary. "Oh, nobody knows for sure and certain," said Martha. "Mr. Craven went off his head like when he was born. The doctors thought he'd have to be put in asylum. It was because Mrs. Craven died, like I told you. He wouldn't set eyes on the baby. He just raved and said it would be another hunchback like him, and it'd better die."
"Is Colin a hunchback?" Mary asked. "He didn't look like one."
"He isn't yet," said Martha. "But he began all wrong. Mother said that there was enough trouble and raging in the house to set any child wrong. They was afraid his back was weak, and they've always been taking care of it, keeping him lying down and not letting him walk. Once they made him wear a brace, but he fretted so he was downright ill. Then a big doctor came to see him and made them take it off. He talked to the other doctor quite rough, in a polite way. He said there'd been too much medicine and too much letting him have his own way."
"I think he's a very spoiled boy," said Mary.
"He's the worst young nowt as he ever was," said Martha. "I won't say as he hasn't been ill a good bit. He's had coughs and colds. It's nearly killed him 2 or 3 times. Once he had rheumatic fever, and once he had typhoid. Eh, Mrs. Medlock did get a fright then. He'd been out of his head, and she was talking to the nurse, thinking he didn't know nothing, and she said, 'He'll die this time for sure, and best thing for him, and for everybody.' Ha! And she looked at him, and there he was with his big eyes open, staring at her as sensible as she was herself. She didn't know what happened, but he just stared at her and says, 'You give me some water and stop talking.'"
"Do you think he will die?" asked Mary.
"Mother says there's no reason why any child should live that gets no fresh air and doesn't do nothing but lie on his back and read picture books and take medicine. He's weak and hates the trouble of being taken out of the doors, and he gets cold so easy he says it makes him ill."
Mary sat and looked at the fire.
"I wonder," she said slowly, if it would not do him good to go out into a garden and watch things growing. It did me good."
"One of the worst fits he ever had," said Martha, "was one time they took him out where the roses is by the fountain. He'd been reading in a paper about people getting something he called rose cold, and he began to sneeze and said he got it, and then a new gardener as didn't know the rules passed by and looked at him curious. He threw himself into a passion, and he said he'd looked at him because he was going to be a hunchback. He cried himself into a fever and was ill all night."
"Well, if he ever gets angry at me, I'll never go and see him again," said Mary.
"He'll have thee if he wants thee," said Martha. "Thou may as well know that at the start."
Very soon afterward, a bell rang, and she rolled up her knitting.
"I dare say the nurse wants me to stay with him a bit," she said. "I hope he's in good temper."
She went out of the room about 10 minutes, and then she came back with a puzzled expression.
"Well, thou has bewitched him," she said. "He's up on his sofa with his picture books. He's told the nurse to stay away until 6 o'clock. I'm to wait in the next room. The minute she was gone, he called me to him and says, I want Mary Lennox to come and talk to me. And remember, you're not to tell anyone. You'd better go as quick as you can.
Mary was quite willing to go quickly, but she did not want to see Colin as much as she wanted to see Dickon. She wanted to see him very much. There was a bright fire on the hearth when she entered his room, and in the daylight she saw it was a very beautiful room indeed. There were rich colors in the rugs, and hangings, and pictures, and books on the walls, which made it look glowing and comfortable, even in spite of the gray sky and falling rain. Colin looked rather like a picture himself. He was wrapped in a velvet dressing gown and sat against a big brocaded cushion. He had a red spot on each cheek. "Come in," he said. "I've been thinking about you all morning."
"I've been thinking about you, too," answered Mary. "You don't know how frightened Martha is. She says Mrs. Medlock will think she told me about you, and then she will be sent away."
He frowned.
"Go and tell her to come here," he said. "She is in the next room."
Mary went and brought her back. Poor Martha was shaking in her shoes. Colin was still frowning.
"Have you to do what I please, or have you not?" he demanded.
"I have to do what you please, sir," Martha faltered, turning quite red.
"Has Medlock to do what I please?"
"Everybody has, sir," said Martha.
"Well, then, if I order you to bring Miss Mary to me, how can Medlock send you away if she finds it out?"
"Oh, please don't let her, sir," pleaded Martha.
"I'll send her away if she dares to say a word about such a thing," said Master Craven grandly. "She wouldn't like that, I can tell you."
"Oh, thank you, sir," bobbing a curtsy. "I want to do my duty, sir."
"What I want is your duty," said Colin more grandly still. "I'll take care of you. Now go away."
When the door closed behind Martha, Colin found Mistress Mary gazing at him as if he had set her wondering.
"Why do you look at me like that?" he asked her. "Why are you what are you thinking about?"
"I'm thinking about two things."
"What are they? Sit down and tell me."
"This is the first one," said Mary, seating herself on the big stool. "Once in India I saw a boy who was a rajah. He had rubies and emeralds and diamonds stuck all over him. He spoke to his people just as you spoke to Martha. Everybody had to do everything he told them, in a minute. I think they would have been killed if they hadn't.
"I shall make you tell me what about rajahs presently," he said. "But first, tell me what the second thing was."
"I was thinking," said Mary, "how different you are from Dickon."
"Who is Dickon?" he said. "What a queer name."
She might as well tell him she thought she could talk about Dickon without mentioning the secret garden. She had liked to hear Martha talk about him. Besides, she longed to talk about him. It would seem to bring him nearer.
"He is Martha's brother. He is 12 years old," she explained. "He is not like anyone else in this world. He can charm foxes and squirrels and birds, just as the natives in India charm snakes. He plays a very soft tune on a pipe, and they come and listen."
There were some big books on a table at his side, and he dragged one suddenly towards him.
"There is a picture of a snake charmer in this," he exclaimed. "Come and look at it."
The book was a beautiful one, with superb colored illustrations, and he turned to one of them.
"Can he do that?" he asked eagerly.
"He played on his pipe, and they listened," Mary explained. "But he doesn't call it magic. He says it's because he lives on the moor so much, and he knows their ways. He says he feels sometimes as if he was a bird or a rabbit himself. He likes them so. I think he asked the robin questions. It seemed as if they talked to each other in soft chirps."
Colin lay back on his cushion, and his eyes grew larger and larger, and the spots on his cheeks burned.
"Tell me some more about him," he said.
"He knows all about eggs and nests," Mary went on, "and he knows where foxes and badgers and otters live. He keeps them secret so that other boys won't find their holes and frighten them. He knows about everything that grows or lives on the moor."
"Does he like the moor?" said Colin. How can he when it's such a great
bare, dreary place. "Oh, it's the most beautiful place," protested Mary. "Thousands of lovely things grow on it, and there are thousands of little creatures all busy building nests and making holes and burrows and chippering or singing or squeaking to each other. They are so busy and having such fun under the earth or in the trees or in the heather. It's their world." "How do you know about all that?" said Colin, turning on his elbow to look at her.
"I have never been there. Why, well, I've been there once, really," said Mary, suddenly remembering. "I only drove over it in the dark. I thought it was hideous. Martha told me about it first, and then Dickon. When Dickon talks about it, it feels as if you saw things and heard them, and as if you were standing in the heather with the sun shining and the gorse smelling like honey and all full of bees and butterflies."
"You never see anything if you are ill," said Colin restlessly. He looked like a person listening to a new sound in the distance and wondering what it was.
"You can't if you stay in a room," said Mary.
"I couldn't go on the moor," he said in a resentful tone. Mary was silent for a minute, and then she said something bold.
"You might. Sometime."
He moved as if he were startled.
"Go on the moor? How could I? I'm going to die.
How do you know?" said Mary unsympathetically. She didn't like the way he had of talking about dying. She did not feel very sympathetic. She felt rather as if he almost boasted about it.
"Oh, I've heard it ever since I remember," he answered crossly. "They are always whispering about it and thinking I don't notice. They wish I would, too."
Mistress Mary felt quite contrary. She pinched her lips together.
"If they wish I would," she said, "I wouldn't."
"Who wishes you would?"
"The servants.
And, of course, Dr. Craven, because he would get Misselweight and be rich instead of poor. He daren't say so, but he always looks cheerful when I'm worse. When I had typhoid fever, his face got quite fat. I think my father wishes it, too."
"I don't believe he does," said Mary quite obstinately.
That made Colin turn and look at her again.
"Don't you?"
he asked. And then he lay back on his cushion and was still, as if he were thinking. And there was quite a long silence. Perhaps they were both of them thinking strange things children do not usually think.
"I like the grand doctor from London because he made them take the iron thing off," said Mary at last. "Did he say you were going to die?"
"No."
"Well, what did he say?"
"He didn't whisper," Colin answered. "Perhaps he knew I hated whispering. I heard him say one thing quite aloud. He said,
'The lad might live if he would make up his mind to it. Put him in the humor.'"
It sounded as if he was in a temper.
"I'll tell you who would be put in the humor, perhaps," said Mary, reflecting. She felt as if she would like this thing to be very settled one way or the other. "I believe Dickon would. He's always talking about live things. He never talks about dead things or things that are ill. He's always looking up in the sky and to watch birds flying or looking down at the earth to see something growing. He has such round blue eyes, and they are so wide open with looking about. And he laughs such a big laugh with his wide mouth, and his cheeks are as red as cherries." She pulled her stool nearer to the sofa, and her expression quite changed at the remembrance of the wide, curving mouth and wide open eyes.
"See here," she said, "don't let us talk about dying. I don't like it. Let us talk about living. Let us talk and talk about Dickon, and then we will look at your pictures." It was the best thing she could have said. To talk about Dickon meant to talk about the moor, and about the cottage, and the 14 people who lived in it on 16 shillings a week, and the children who got fat on the moor grass like wild ponies, and about Dickon's mother, and the skipping rope, and the moor with the sun on it, and about pale green points sticking up out of the black sod. And it was all so alive that Mary talked more than she had ever talked before, and Colin both talked and listened as he had never done either before, and they both began to laugh over nothings, as children will when they are happy together, and they laughed so that, in the end, they were making as much noise as if they had been two ordinary, healthy, natural 10-year-old creatures, instead of a hard little unloving girl and a sickly boy who believed that he was going to die. They enjoyed themselves so much that they forgot the pictures, and they forgot about the time. They had been laughing quite loudly over Ben Weatherstaff and his robin, and Colin was actually sitting up as if he had forgotten about his weak back, when he suddenly remembered something. "Do you know there is one thing we have never once thought of?" he said. "We are cousins." It seemed so queer that they had talked so much and never remembered this simple thing that they laughed more than ever, because they had gotten into this humor to laugh at everything. And in the midst of the fun, the door opened and in walked Dr. Craven and Mrs. Medlock. Dr. Craven started in actual alarm, and Mrs. Medlock almost fell back, because he had accidentally bumped against her.
"Good Lord!" exclaimed poor Mrs. Medlock, with her eyes almost starting out of her head. "Oh, good Lord!"
"What is this?" said Dr. Craven, coming forward.
"What does it mean?"
Then Mary was reminded of the boy Rajah again. Colin answered as if neither the doctor's alarm nor Mrs. Medlock's terror were of the slightest consequence. He was as little disturbed or frightened as if an elderly cat and dog had walked into the room.
"This is my cousin, Mary Lennox," he said. "I asked her to come and talk to me. I like her. She must come and talk to me whenever I send for her."
Dr. Craven turned reproachfully to Mrs. Medlock.
"Oh, sir," she panted, "I don't know how it's happened. There's not a servant in the place that dared to talk. They all have their orders."
"Nobody told her anything," said Colin. "She heard me crying and found me herself. I am glad she came. Don't be silly, Medlock." Mary saw that Dr. Craven did not look pleased, but it was quite plain that he dare not oppose his patient. He sat down by Colin and felt his pulse.
"I'm afraid there has been too much excitement. Excitement is not good for you, my boy," he said.
"I should be excited if she kept away," answered Colin, his eyes beginning to look dangerously sparkling. "I am better. She makes me better. The nurse must bring her tea with mine. We will have tea together."
Mrs. Medlock and Dr. Craven looked at each other in a troubled way, but there was evidently nothing to be done.
"He does look rather better, sir," ventured Mrs. Medlock. "But," thinking the matter over, "he looked better this morning before she came into the room."
"She came into the room last night. She stayed with me a long time. She sang a Hindustani song to me, and it made me go to sleep," said Colin. "I was better when I wakened up. I wanted my breakfast. I want my tea now. Tell nurse, Medlock." Dr. Craven did not stay very long. He talked to the nurse for a few minutes when she came into the room and said a few words of warning to Colin. He must not talk too much. He must not forget that he was ill. He must not forget that he was very easily tired. Mary thought that there seemed to be a number of uncomfortable things he was not to forget. Colin looked fretful and kept his strange black-lashed eyes fixed on Dr. Craven's face.
"I want to forget it," he said at last. "She makes me forget it. That is why I want her."
Dr. Craven did not look happy when he left the room. He gave a puzzled glance at the little girl sitting on the large stool. She had become a stiff, silent child again as soon as he entered, and he could not see what the attraction was. The boy actually did look brighter, however, and he sighed rather heavily as he went into the corridor.
"They are always wanting me to eat things when I don't want to," said Colin, as the nurse brought in the tea and put it on the table by the sofa. "Now, if you'll eat, I will. Those muffins look so nice and hot. Tell me about Rajahs."
"Some nights I dream that a round-shouldered man comes in my room on a beam of moonlight. He never says what he wants. He just sits with a book in his hands. And then I dreamed that the round-shouldered man takes me off on a ride for
We will now continue our reading of The Secret Garden with Chapter 15. Your reader is Ken Walsh.
Chapter 15, Nest Building. After another week of rain, the high arch of blue sky appeared again, and the sun which poured down was quite hot. Though there had been no chance to see either the Secret Garden or Dickon, Mistress Mary had enjoyed herself very much. The week had not seemed long. She had spent hours of every day with Colin in his room, talking about rajahs or gardens or Dickon and the cottage on the moor. They had looked at the splendid books and pictures, and sometimes Mary had read things to Colin, and sometimes he had read a little to her. When he was amused and interested, she thought he scarcely looked like an invalid at all, except that his face was so colorless, and he was always on the sofa. "You're a sly young one to listen and get out of your bed to go following things up like you did that night," Mrs. Medlock said once. "But there's no saying it's not been a sort of blessing to the lot of us. He's not had a tantrum or a whining fit since you made friends. The nurse was just going to give up the case because she was so sick of him, but she says she doesn't mind staying now that you've gone on duty with her," laughing a little. In her talks with Colin, Mary had tried to be very cautious about the Secret Garden. There were certain things she wanted to find out from him, but she felt that she must find them out without asking him direct questions. In the first place, as she began to like to be with him, she wanted to discover whether he was the kind of boy you could tell a secret to. He was not in the least like Dickon, but he was evidently so pleased with the idea of a garden no one knew anything about, she thought perhaps he could be trusted. But she had not known him long enough to be sure. The second thing she wanted to find out was this: if he could be trusted, if he really could, wouldn't it be possible to take him to the garden without having anyone find it out? The grand doctor had said that he must have fresh air, and Colin had said that he would not mind fresh air in the Secret Garden. Perhaps if he had a great deal of fresh air, and knew Dickon and the robin, and saw things growing, he might not think so much about dying. Mary had seen herself in the glass sometimes lately, when she had realized that she looked quite a different creature from the child he had seen when she arrived from India. This child looked nicer. Even Martha had seen a change in her. "The air from the moor has done thee good already," she had said. "Thou'rt not nigh so yeller, and thou'rt not nigh so scrawny. Even the hair doesn't slump down on the head so flat. It's got some life in it, so it sticks out a bit." "It's like me," said Mary. "It's growing stronger and fatter. I'm sure there's more of it."
"It looks it for sure," said Martha, ruffling it up a bit round her face. "Thou'rt not half so ugly when it's that way, and there's a bit of red in thy cheeks."
If gardens and fresh air had been good for her, perhaps they would be good for Colin. But then, if he hated people to look at him, perhaps he would not like to see Dickon. "Why does it make you angry when you are looked at?" she inquired one day. "I always hated it," he answered, "even when I was very little. Then, when they took me to the seaside, and I used to lie in my carriage, everybody used to stare, and ladies would stop and talk to my nurse, and then they would begin to whisper, and I knew then they were saying I shouldn't live to grow up. Then sometimes the ladies would pat my cheeks and say, 'Poor child!' Once, when a lady did that, I screamed out loud and bit her hand. She was so frightened she ran away." "She thought you had gone mad like a dog," said Mary, not at all admiringly.
"I don't care what she thought," said Colin, frowning.
"I wonder why you didn't scream and bite me when I came into your room," said Mary. Then she began to smile slowly. "I thought you were a ghost or a dream," he said. "You can't bite a ghost or a dream, and if you scream, they don't care." "Would you hate it if a boy looked at you?" Mary asked uncertainly. He lay back on his cushion and paused thoughtfully.
"There's one boy," he said quite slowly, as if he were thinking out over every word. "There's one boy I believe I shouldn't mind. It's that boy who knows where the foxes live. Dickon."
"I'm sure you wouldn't mind him," said Mary.
"The birds don't, and other animals," he said, still thinking it over. "Perhaps that's why I shouldn't. He's a sort of animal charmer, and I'm a boy animal." Then he laughed, and she laughed too. In fact, it ended in their both laughing a great deal and finding the idea of a boy animal hiding in his hole very funny indeed. What Mary felt afterwards was that she need not fear about Dickon. On that first morning, when the sky was blue again, Mary wakened very early. The sun was pouring in slanting rays through the blinds, and there was something so joyous in the sight of that she jumped out of bed and ran to the window. She drew up the blinds and opened the window itself, and a great waft of fresh, scented air blew in upon her. The moor was blue, and the whole world looked as if something magic had happened to it. There were tender little fluting sounds here and there and everywhere, as if scores of birds were beginning to tune up for a concert. Mary put her hand out of the window and held it in the sun. "It's warm, warm," she said. "It will make the green points push up and up and up, and it will make the bulbs and roots work and struggle with all their might under the earth." She kneeled down and leaned out of the window as far as she could, breathing big breaths and sniffing the air until she laughed because she remembered what Dickon's mother had said about the end of his nose quivering like a rabbit's. "It must be very early," she said. "The little clouds are all pink, and I've never seen the sky look like this. No one is up, and I don't even hear the stable boys." A sudden thought made her scramble to her feet. "I can't wait. I am going to see the garden." She had learned to dress herself by this time, and she put on her clothes in 5 minutes. She knew a small side door, which she could unbolt herself, and she flew downstairs in her stocking feet and put on her shoes in the hall. She unchained and unbolted and unlocked, and when the door was open, she sprang across the step with one bound, and there she was standing on the grass, which seemed to have turned green. And with the sun pouring down on her and warm, sweet wafts about her and the fluting and twittering and singing coming from every bush and tree, she clasped her hands for poor joy and looked up in the sky, and it was so blue and pink and pearly and white and flooded with springtime light that she felt as if she must flute and sing aloud herself, and knew that thrushes and robins and skylarks could not possibly help it. She ran around the shrubs and paths toward the secret garden. "It is different already," she said. "The grass is greener, and things are sticking up everywhere, and things are uncurling, and green buds of leaves are showing. This afternoon I am sure Dickon will come." The long, warm rain had done strange things to the herbaceous beds, which bordered the walk by the lower wall. There were things sprouting and pushing out from the roots and clumps of plants, and there were actually here and there glimpses of royal purple and yellow unfurling among the stems of crocuses. 6 months before, Mistress Mary would not have seen how the world was waking up, but now she missed nothing. When she had reached the place where the door hid itself under the ivy, she was startled by a curious loud sound. It was the caw-caw of a crow, and it came from the top of the wall. And when she looked up, there sat a big, glossy, plumaged, blue-black bird, looking down at her very wisely indeed. She had never seen a crow so close before, and he had made her a little nervous. But the next moment he spread his wings and flapped across the garden. She hoped he was not going to stay inside, and she pushed the door open, wondering if he would. When she got fairly into the garden, she saw that he probably did intend to stay, because he had alighted on a dwarf apple tree, and under the apple tree was lying a reddish animal with a bushy tail, and both of them were watching the stooping body and rust-red head of Dickon, who was kneeling on the grass working hard. Mary flew across the grass to him. "Oh, Dickon, Dickon," she cried out, "how could you get here so early? How could you? The sun has only just got up." He got himself up, laughing and glowing, and tousled, his eyes like a bit of the sky. "Eh," he said, "I was up long before him. How could I stay the bed? The world's all fair begun again this morning, it has.
and it's been working and humming and scratching and piping and nest building and breathing out scents till you've got to be out on it instead of lying on your back. When the sun did jump up, the moor went mad for joy, and I was in the midst of the heather, and I run like mad myself, shouting and singing, and I come straight here. I couldn't have stayed away. Why, the garden was lying here waiting. Mary put her hands on her chest, panting, as if she had been running herself. Oh, Dickon, Dickon, she said, I am so happy I can scarcely breathe. Seeing him talking to a stranger, the little bushy-tailed animal rose from its place under the tree and came to him, and the rook, calling once, flew down from its branch and settled quietly on his shoulder. This is the little fox cub, he said, rubbing the little reddish animal's head. It's named Captain, and this here's Soot. Soot, he flew across the moor with me, and Captain, he runs same as if hounds had been after him. They both felt same as I did. Neither of the creatures looked as if he were the least afraid of Mary. When Dickon began to walk about, Soot stayed on his shoulder, and Captain trotted quietly close to his side. See here, said Dickon. See how these has pushed up, and these, and eh, look at these here. He threw himself upon his knees, and Mary went down beside him. They had come upon a whole clump of crocuses burst into purple and gold. Mary bent her face down and kissed them. You never kiss a person in that way, she said when she lifted her head. Flowers are so different. He looked puzzled, but smiled. Eh, he said, I've kissed mother many a time that way, when I come in from the moor after a day's roaming, and she stood there at the door and in the sun, looking so glad and comfortable. They ran from one part of the garden to another, and found so many wonders that they were obliged to remind themselves that they must whisper or speak low. He showed her swelling leaf buds on rose branches, which had seemed dead. He showed her 10,000 new green points pushing through the mold. They put their eager young noses close to the earth and sniffed at its warm springtime breathing. They dug and pulled and laughed low with rapture until Mistress Mary's hair was as tumbled as Dickens, and her cheeks were almost as poppy red as his. There was every joy on earth in the secret garden that morning, and in the midst of them came a delight more delightful than all, because it was more wonderful. Swiftly something flew across the wall and darted through the trees to a close-ground corner. A little flare of red-breasted bird with something hanging from its beak. Dickon stood quite still and put his hand on Mary, almost as if they had suddenly found themselves laughing in the church. "We mustn't stir," he whispered in broad Yorkshire. "We mustn't scarce breathe. I knowed he was mate-hunting when I seed him last. It's Ben Weatherstaff's robin. He's building his nest. He'll stay here if we don't flight him." They settled down softly upon the grass and sat there without moving. "Us mustn't seem as if us was watching him too close," said Dickon. "He'd be out with us for good if he got the notion us was interfering now. He'll be a good bit different till all this is over. He's setting up housekeeping. He'll be shyer and readier to take things ill. He's got no time for visiting and gossiping. Us must keep still a bit and try to look as if us was grass and trees and bushes. Then, when he's got used to seeing us, he'll chirp a bit, and he'll know us'll not be in his way." Mistress Mary was not at all sure that she knew, as Dickon seemed to, how to look like grass and trees and bushes. But he had said the queer thing as if it were the simplest and most natural thing in the world, and she felt it must be quite easy to him. And indeed, she watched him for a few minutes carefully, wondering if it was possible for him to quietly turn green and put up branches and leaves. But he only sat wonderfully still, and when he spoke, dropped his voice to such a softness that was curious that she could hear him, but she could. "It's part of the springtime, this nest building is," he said. "I warn it's been going on in the same way every year since the world was begun. They've got their way of thinking and doing things, and a body had better not meddle. You can lose a friend in springtime easier than any other season if you're too curious. If we talk about him,
I can't help looking at him, Mary said as softly as possible. We must talk of something else. There's something I want to tell you.
He'll like it better if us talks of something else, said Dickon. What is it thou's got to tell me?
Well, do you know about Colin? She whispered. He turned his head to look at her.
What does thou know about him? He asked.
I've seen him. I have been to talk to him every day this week. He wants me to come. He says I'm making him forget about being ill and dying, answered Mary. Dickon looked actually relieved as soon as the surprise died away from his round face.
I am glad of that, he exclaimed. I'm right down glad. It makes me easier. I knowed I must say nothing about him, and I don't have like having to hide things.
Don't you like hiding the garden? Said Mary.
I'll never tell about it, he answered. But I says to Mother, Mother, I says, I got a secret to keep. It's not a bad one, that knows it. It's no worse than hiding where a bird's nest is. That doesn't mind it, does tha?
Mary always wanted to hear about Mother.
What did she say? She asked, not at all afraid to hear.
Dickon grinned sweet-temperedly.
It was just like her what she said, he answered. She give me my head a bit of a rub and laughed, and she says, "Eh, lad, thou can have all the secrets thou likes. I've knowed thee 12 year.
How did you know about Colin? Asked Mary.
Everybody has knowed about Mr. Craven. Knowed there was a little lad as was like to be a cripple, and they knowed Mr. Craven didn't like him to be talked about. Folks is so sorry for Mr. Craven, because Mrs. Craven was such a pretty young lady, and they were so fond of each other. Mrs. Medlock stops in her cottage whenever she goes to Tweet, and she doesn't mind talking to Mother before us children, because she knows us has been brought up to be trusty. How did Da found out about him? Martha was in fine trouble the last time she came home. She said thou'd heard him fretting, and Da was asking questions, and she didn't know what to say.
Mary told him her story about the midnight wuthering of the wind, which had wakened her, and about the faint far-off sounds of the complaining voice, which had led her down the dark corridors with her candle, and had ended with her opening of the door of the dimly lighted room with the carven four-posted bed in the corner, when she described the small ivory-white face and the strange black-rimmed eyes. Dickon shook her head.
"Them's just like his mother's eyes, only hers was always laughing, they say," he said. "They say as Mr. Craven can't bear to see him when he's awake, and it's because his eyes is so like his mother's, and yet look so different in miserable bit of a face."
"Do you think he wants to die?" whispered Mary.
"No, but he wishes he'd never been born. Mother, she says that's the worst thing on earth for a child. Them as is not wanted scarce ever thrives. Mr. Craven, he'd buy anything as money could buy for the poor lad, but he'd like to forget as he's on earth. For one thing, he's afraid he'll look at him some day and find he's growed hunchback."
"Colin's so afraid of it himself that he won't sit up," said Mary. "He says he's always thinking that if he should feel a lump coming, he should go crazy and scream himself to death."
He oughtn't to lie there, thinking things like that," said Dickon. "No lad could get well as thought them sort of things."
The fox was lying on the grass close by him, looking up to ask for a pat now and then, and Dickon bent down and rubbed his neck softly and thought a few minutes in silence. Presently he lifted his head and looked round the garden. "When first we got in here," he said, "it seemed like everything was gray. Look round now, and tell me if thou doesn't see a difference." Mary looked and caught her breath a little. "Why," she cried, "the gray wall is changing. It is as if a green mist were creeping over. It's almost like a green gauze veil."
"Aye," said Dickon, "and it'll be greener and greener till the gray is all gone. Can thou guess what I was thinking?"
"I know it was something nice," said Mary eagerly. "I believe it was something about Colin.
I was thinking that if he was out here, he wouldn't be watching for lumps to grow on his back. He'd be watching for buds to break on the rose bushes, and he'd likely be healthier," explained Dickon. I was wondering if us could ever get him in the humor to come out here and lie under the trees in his carriage. I've been wondering that myself. I've thought of it almost every time I talk to him, said Mary. I've wondered if he could keep a secret, and I've wondered if we could bring him here without anyone seeing us. I thought perhaps you could push his carriage. The doctor said he must have fresh air, and if he wants us to take him out, no one dare disobey him. He won't go out for other people, and perhaps they will be glad if he will go out with us. He could order the gardeners to keep away, so they wouldn't find out. Dickon was thinking very hard as he scratched Captain's back. It'd be good for him, I'll warrant, he said. Us would not be thinking he'd never been born. Us would be just two children watching a garden grow, and he'd be another. Two lads and a little lass just looking on at the springtime. I warrant it'd be better than the doctor's stuff. He's been lying in his room so long, and he's always been so afraid of his back, that it has made him queer, she said Mary. She knows a good many things out of books, but he doesn't know anything else. He says he's been too ill to notice things, and he hates going outdoors, and hates gardens and gardeners. But he likes to hear about this garden, because it is a secret. I daren't tell him much, but he said he wanted to see it. "Us'll have him out here sometime for sure," said Dickon. "I could push his carriage well enough. Hast thou noticed how the robin and his mate has been working while we've been sitting here? Look at him perched on that branch, wondering where it'll be best to put that twig he's got in his beak." He made one of his low whistling calls, and the robin turned his head and looked at him inquiringly, still holding his twig. Dickon spoke to him as Ben Weatherstaff did, but Dickon's tone was one of friendly advice. "Wheresever thou puts it," he said, "it'll be all right. Thou knew how to build the nest before thou came out of the egg. Get on with thee, lad. Thou's got no time to lose." "Oh, I do like to hear you talk to him," Mary said, laughing delightedly. "Ben Weatherstaff scolds him and makes fun of him, and he hops about and looks as if he understood every word, and I know he likes it. Ben Weatherstaff says he is so conceited he would rather have stones thrown at him than not be noticed." Dickon laughed too and went on talking. "Thou knows us and won't trouble thee," he said to the robin. "Us is near being wild things ourselves. Us is nest building too, bless thee. Look out, and thou doesn't tell on us." And though the robin did not answer, because his beak was occupied, Mary knew that when he flew away with his twig to his corner of the garden, the darkness of dew bright eye meant that he would not tell their secret for the world.
Your garden grow.
It's bright, he wants his eyes of spring. It's up and down to
something inside.
Mary clicked and tried to pass the garden
door. And an island lost out, so it's lost in it up and out inside.
We will now continue our reading of The Secret Garden with Chapter 16. Your reader is Angela Loudon.
Chapter 16. "I won't," said Mary. They found a great deal to do that morning, and Mary was late in returning to the house, and was also in such a hurry to get back to her work that she quite forgot Colin until the last moment. "Tell Colin that I can't come and see him yet," she said to Martha. "I'm very busy in the garden." Martha looked rather frightened. "Miss Mary," she said, "it may put him all out of humor when I tell him that." But Mary was not afraid of him as other people were, and she was not a self-sacrificing person. "I can't stay," she answered. "Dickon's waiting for me," and she ran off. The afternoon was even lovelier and busier than the morning had been. Already nearly all the weeds were cleared out of the garden, and most of the roses and trees had been pruned or dug about. Dickon had brought a spade of his own, and he had taught Mary to use all of her tools, so that by the time it was plain that though the lovely wild place was not likely to become a gardener's garden, it would be a wilderness of growing things before the springtime was over. "There'll be the apple blossoms and cherry blossoms overhead," Dickon said, working away with all his might. "And there'll be peach and plum trees blooming against the walls, and the grass will be carpet of flowers." The little fox and the rook were as happy and busy as they were, and the robin and his mate flew backwards and forwards like tiny streaks of lightning. Sometimes the rook flapped his black wings and soared away over the treetops in the park. Each time he came back and perched near Dickon and cawed several times as if he were relating his adventures, and Dickon talked to him just as he talked to the robin. Once, when Dickon was so busy that he did not answer him at first, Soot flew onto his shoulder and gently tweaked his ear with his large beak. When Mary wanted to rest a little, Dickon sat down with her under a tree, and once he took his pipe out of his pocket and played the soft, strange little notes, and two squirrels appeared on the wall and looked and listened. "That's a good bit stronger than that was," Dickon said, looking at her as she was digging. "That's beginning to look different for sure." Mary was glowing with exercise and good spirits. "I'm getting fatter and fatter every day," she said, quite exultantly. "Mrs. Medlock will have to get me some bigger dresses. Martha says my hair is growing thicker. It isn't so flat and stringy." The sun was beginning to set and sending deep gold-colored rays slanting under the trees when they parted. "It'll be fine tomorrow," said Dickon. "I'll be at work by sunrise." "So will I," said Mary. She ran back to the house as quickly as her feet would carry her. She wanted to tell Colin about Dickon's fox cub and the rook and about what the springtime had been doing. She felt sure he would like to hear. So it was not very pleasant when she opened the door of her room to see Martha standing waiting for her with a doleful face. "What's the matter?" she asked. "What did Colin say when you told him I couldn't come?" "Eh," said Martha, "wish that gone. He was nigh going into one of his tantrums. There's been a nice to-do all afternoon to keep him quiet. He would watch the clock all the time." Mary's lips pinched themselves together. She was no more used to considering other people than Colin was, and she saw no reason why an ill-tempered boy should interfere with the things she liked best. She knew nothing about the pitifulness of people who had been ill and the nervous and who did not know that they could control their tempers and need not make other people ill and nervous too. When she had had a headache in India, she had done her best to see that everybody else also had had a headache or something quite as bad, and she felt she was quite right. But, of course, now she felt that Colin was quite wrong. He was not on his sofa when she went into his room. He was lying flat on his back in bed, and he did not turn his head toward her as she came in. This was a bad beginning, and Mary marched up to him with her stiff manner. "Why didn't you get up?" she said. "I did get up this morning when I thought you were coming," he answered, without looking at her. "I made them put me back in bed this afternoon. My back ached and my head ached and I was tired. Why didn't you come?" "I was working in the garden with Dickon," said Mary. Colin frowned and condescended to look at her. "I won't let that boy come here if you go and stay with him instead of coming to talk with me," he said. Mary flew into a fine passion. She could fly into a passion without making a noise. She just grew sour and obstinate and did not care what happened. "If you send Dickon away, I'll never come into this room again," she retorted. "You'll have to if I want you," said Colin. "I won't," said Mary. "I'll make you," said Colin. "They shall drag you in." "Shall they, Mr. Raja?" Mary said fiercely. "They may drag me in, but they can't make me talk when they get me here. I'll sit and clench my teeth and never tell you one thing. I won't even look at you. I'll stare at the floor." They were a nice, agreeable pair as they glared at each other. If they had been two little street boys, they would have sprung at each other and had a rough-and-tumble fight. As it was, they did the next thing to it. "You are a selfish thing," cried Colin. "What are you?" said Mary. "Selfish people always say that. Anyone is selfish who doesn't do what they want. You're more selfish than I am. You're the most selfish boy I ever saw." "I'm not," snapped Colin. "I'm not as selfish as your fine Dickon is. He keeps you playing in the dirt when he knows I'm all by myself. He's selfish, if you like." Mary's eyes flashed fire. "He's nicer than any other boy that ever lived," she said. He's like an angel." It might sound rather silly to say that, but she did not care. "A nice angel," Colin sneered ferociously. "He's a common cottage boy of the moor." "He's better than a common Raja," retorted Mary. "He's 1,000 times better." Because she was the stronger of the two, she was beginning to get the better of him. The truth was that he had never had a fight with anyone like himself in his life, and upon the whole, it was rather good for him, though neither he nor Mary knew anything about that. He turned his head on his pillow and shut his eyes, and a big tear was squeezed out and ran down his cheek. He was beginning to feel pathetic and sorry for himself, not for anyone else. "I'm not as selfish as you because I'm always ill, and I'm sure there's a lump coming on my back," he said, "and I'm going to die besides." "You're not," contradicted Mary unsympathetically. He opened his eyes quite wide with indignation. He had never heard such a thing said before. He was at once furious and slightly pleased, if a person could be both at the same time. "I'm not?" he cried. "I am. You know I am. Everybody says so." "I don't believe it," said Mary sourly. "You just say that to make people sorry. I believe you're proud of it. I don't believe it. If you're a nice boy, it might be true, but you're too nasty." In spite of his invalid back, Colin sat up in bed in quite a healthy rage. "Get out of the room," he shouted, and he caught hold of his pillow and threw it at her. He was not strong enough to throw it far, and it only fell at her feet. But Mary's face looked as pinched as a nutcracker. "I'm going," she said, "and I won't come back." She walked to the door, and when she reached it, she turned around and spoke again. "I was going to tell you all sorts of nice things," she said. "Dickon brought his fox and his rook, and I was going to tell you all about them. Now I won't tell you a single thing." She marched out of the door and closed it behind her. And there, to her great astonishment, she found the trained nurse standing as if she had been listening, and, more amazing still, she was laughing. She was a big, handsome young woman who ought not to have been a trained nurse at all, as she could not bear invalids, and she was always making excuses to leave Colin to Martha or anyone else who would take her place. Mary had never liked her, and she simply stood and gazed up at her as she stood giggling into her handkerchief. "What are you laughing at?" she asked her. "At you two young ones," said the nurse. "It's the best thing that could happen to this sickly, pampered thing to have someone just stand up to him that's spoiled as himself." And she laughed into her handkerchief again. "If he'd had a young vixen of a sister to fight with, it would have been the saving of him."
"Is he going to die?"
"I don't know, and I don't care," said the nurse. "Hysterics and temper are half what ails him."
"What are hysterics?" asked Mary.
"Oh, you'll find out if you work him into a tantrum after this. But at any rate, you've given him something to have hysterics about, and I'm glad of it." Mary went back to her room, not feeling at all as she had felt when she had come in from the garden. She was cross and disappointed, but not at all sorry for Colin. She had looked forward to telling him a great many things, and she had meant to try to make up her mind whether it would be safe to trust him with the great secret.
she had been beginning to think it would be, but now she had changed her mind entirely. She would never tell him, and he could stay in his room and never get any fresh air and die if he liked. It would serve him right. She felt so sour and unrelenting that for a few minutes she almost forgot about Dickon and the green veil creeping over the world and the soft wind blowing down from the moor. Martha was waiting for her, and the trouble in her face had been temporarily replaced by interest and curiosity. There was a wooden box on the table, and its cover had been removed and revealed that it was full of neat packages. "Mr. Craven sent it to you," said Martha. "It looks as if it had picture books in it." Mary remembered what he had asked her the day she had gone to his room. "Do you want anything? Dolls, toys, books?" She opened the package, wondering if he had sent a doll, and also wondering what she should do with it if he had. But he had not sent one. There were several beautiful books, such as Colin had, and two of them were about gardens and were full of pictures. There were two or three games, and there was a beautiful little writing case with a gold monogram on it and a gold pen and inkstand. Everything was so nice that her pleasure to begin that her everything was so nice that her pleasure began to crowd her anger out of her mind. She had not expected him to remember her at all, and her hard little heart grew quite warm. "I can write better than I can print," she said, "and the first thing I shall write with that pen will be a letter to him. I am much obliged." If she had been friends with Colin, she would have run to show him her presents at once, and they would have looked at the pictures and read some of the gardening books and perhaps tried playing the games, and he would have enjoyed himself so much he would never once have thought he was going to die or have put his hands on his spine to see if there was a lump coming. He had a way of doing that which she could not bear. It gave her an uncomfortable, frightened feeling because he had always looked so frightened himself. He said that if he felt even quite a little lump some day, he should know his hunch had begun to grow. Something he had heard Mrs. Medlock whispering to the nurse had given him the idea, and he had thought it over. He had thought over it in secret until it was quite firmly fixed in his mind. Mrs. Medlock had said his father's back had begun to show its crookedness in that way when he was a child. He had never told anyone but Mary that most of his tantrums, as they called them, grew out of his hysterical hidden fear. Mary had been sorry for him when he had told her. He had always begun to think about it when he was cross or tired, she said to herself. And he has been cross today. Perhaps he has been thinking about it all afternoon. She stood still, looking down at the carpet and thinking. "I said I would never go back again," she hesitated, knitting her brows. "But perhaps, just perhaps, I will go and see if he wants me in the morning. Perhaps he'll try to throw his pillow at me again, but I think I'll go."
"By the hedge, cut it back, dig a hole, try to fill it. Plant a rose, tie it back, find a mole, try to kill it. It's a maze, this garden, it's a maze of ways, and a man can spend his day. It's a maze, this garden, it's a maze of paths, but a soul can find the way." For an old...
Thank you for listening to our feature presentation, The Secret Garden. That's all the time we have for today's readings. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of this classic work by Frances Hodgson Burnett. And will join us next time as we continue readings from The Secret Garden. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. If you want more information about TRRS or our programming, please visit our website at trianglereadingservice.org or call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. On behalf of the Triangle Radio Reading Service, I'm Kurt Benrood. An English garden grows.
Oh, the roses climb up sublime, the time when an English garden.
garden grow.